Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast, brought to you by Jeff Pollock. Hey, do you need a lawyer? Maybe not today, but I bet you'll need one tomorrow. Our lawyer is Jeff Pollock, sponsor of the podcast and a friend, a fantastic lawyer, family, small, boutique, bespoke even, without the bespoke prices. So jeffpollock.com, that's Jeff with a G. If you need a lawyer, go get yourself Jeff Pollock.
He said something to me that was kind of cool once. By the way, hi, Matt.
Hello, Bob. Oh, hey, Bob.
We went to the Remembrance Day thing at Queen's Park.
Yep.
And we were just chatting. And he said, you know, I wouldn't represent somebody that I wouldn't hang out with. And I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
You get the feeling maybe not every lawyer has that philosophy.
I don't know if you heard this, Bob. Apparently, there's a stereotype that some lawyers are a little bit of a rapscallion.
A bit of a rapscallion. I don't know why you just reminded me of Frank Zappa there for some reason.
Mm.
I've got so much to get to with you. Just a crazy, awesome, interesting few days of sports, and then an amazing NFL weekend coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And I really want to let you cook on the NFL because there's some very consequential games.
I will tell you the one thing I'm really bummed out about.
Oh, bummed.
I wanted Dallas to win so bad.
Yeah.
For one reason. Because if they had won and they had slowed down Detroit's offense, then it's, oh, that Quinion Williams trade they made with the Jets. I think I'm pronouncing his first name right, but I'm probably not. Anyway, if they had done that, because their defense, since they made that trade, had been one of the best ones in the NFL, according to the nerds at Pro Football Focus. So if they had won, then they had a legitimate chance of making the playoffs. And then Jerry Jones goes from a buffoon at the beginning of the year with how he handled Micah Parsons to a genius. I just wanted a month of Jerry Jones, super genius.
He's got a bit of a Trumpy thing in that if you throw out enough ideas, eventually some of them have to kind of be right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then people will forgive you your catastrophic failures because you're a big, colorful personality. And then if you have enough bluster, you can sell a 1-for-10 batting average. And I think he's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of see your point. I wrote down in my notes that the Cowboys died as they lived, giving up points.
They did. So many.
So many points. And then when they got it within three, I mean, in the end, it was 44-30.
Yeah.
They got it to 30-27 at one point, I think.
It was somewhere around there. Eventually, at one point, I went to bed just because I had a 4:45 wake-up call.
And I went upstairs to make myself just like a little snack. And I came back down. I was like, wait a minute. This game's a blowout. What happened?
The Lions' offense is that good. I didn't think Amon St. Brown was going to play. He did. And listen, the Cowboys, good on them. They had that nice run. Their defense certainly got better, but they got overwhelmed. They got overwhelmed by a much better offense.
Dallas probably won't make the playoffs. I think they're at a 9% chance now or something.
They've got to run the slate, but they also need, I think, at least two teams to fall. Like, they're going to need, like, say, the Bay, they're going to need two NFC North teams to both sort of collapse for them to get into the playoffs.
They have the end of the season is like the end of a Marvel comic where Spider-Man's lying there and he has to, you know, there's something that he has to knock off a ledge and it's half a block away. But if he can just, he takes his effort and he launches his web and it just grazes the thing and the thing falls and catastrophe is averted. It just never really happens that way. This part of the season is like so stupid with the percentages and this has to happen and not. I think Detroit's an interesting team because honestly, Matt, I watch a lot of their games because I like Detroit. I have no idea if they're good or not. I have no idea.
But here's the thing, Bob. I'll turn it around. Who do you know is good?
Nobody.
The NFL is having a year because last year...
I think Denver's good.
Denver's good. Do you... What's your trust level on Bo Nix?
That's the big question. My trust level on Sean Payton's pretty high.
It is. Last year, Philadelphia dominant, Detroit dominant, Buffalo dominant, Baltimore, there's about five, Kansas City. A lot of teams that went from 12-5 to 15-2, and all of them are fighting for the playoff spot, or the Bills, they're in the seventh spot right now. Like there is no great team in the NFL. There's no Colorado Avalanche. There's no Oklahoma City Thunder in the NFL this year. It's why the Bears are the number one seed. And we're like, yeah, but I don't trust Caleb Williams on 3rd-and-8. New England is the number one seed in the AFC. And we're like, yeah, who did you beat beyond one good win against the Bills? So there's just no great team.
It feels like you have to align yourself with a team that's maybe on one side of the ball, like an offense or a defense. Like, I'm pretty sure Detroit's offense is pretty good.
They are.
And so are they going to be able to score enough in the playoffs? I don't know.
They will at home. Can they do it? Can Jared Goff do it on the road, outdoors in January?
Who do you trust more, Bo Nix or Jared Goff? Take the weapons out of it. Take just analyze the man.
I still have to go with Jared Goff. I do. But I am concerned about him outdoors. But I do trust him more than Bo Nix. But the fact I had to think about it, you know, that's a little telling.
It's not great. They're both classic tier two quarterbacks in the sense that they have strong things about them, but then weak things about them. And those weak things, if you exploit them correctly, like Josh Allen, you know, makes mistakes, everybody, whatever. But as a clear top tier quarterback, there isn't really a flaw in his game.
Nope, there isn't. The flaw in his game is his coach and his general
manager. The roster around him. You know, but when you're game planning against him, you can't look at it and say, well, if we can just get him to do this. Every quarterback doesn't love pressure. That's not what I mean.
Yeah.
Put Bo Nix in a situation where he has to think, and he'll outthink himself.
Yeah, he's young, and
he'll do something dumb.
He'll do something dumb. And by the way, good on him. He's had a great year. He made the throws, like, week in and week out. He makes the throws he needs to. He's beaten Philly, beaten Kansas City. By the way, if I can go on just a quick tirade, I have the dumbest quarterback in the NFL. Jackson Dart is stupid. The worst part is not just what he does on the field, which is stupid, all the running and refusing to slide, but he's like a child. Like, he, when a child goes, but why can't I have that? They have that. I want to have that. He came out the other day and said, hey, I watch the NFL. I see Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Those guys get hit. I'm like, dummy. Josh Allen is 20 pounds heavier than you, and no one is better at sliding than Patrick Mahomes. Like, when Jackson Dart says, hey, this is how I've always played, you were one of the biggest guys in high school. You would be one of the larger guys when you were at university. You're the small guy now. Shut the fuck up and learn to slide. He's so dumb. He's Axe body spray with a helmet.
He's a bit gronky.
Yeah, he's really gronky. Like, put it this way, Gronkowski shit talks Jackson Dart. Like, when the Gronks are together, they're like, that Jackson Dart guy, he's not that bright.
Oh, Mongo-like candy.
Oh, God.
Candy Graham for Mongo. Well, since we're doing the NFL, I wanted to play a game with you then. Because it is a big, there's four or five really consequential games coming up this weekend. And we were going to talk about Christmas, but we can get to that at the end of the NFL. We're rolling already. So I wanted to play a game with you called If I Was a Betting Man. Now, your show.
Brought to you by FanDuel.
Right.
Play your game your way.
Right. So your sponsor on your radio show is a gambling outlet.
That's right.
And you talk a lot about the lines. And people, I'm assuming, listen to your show because they love you. But they do expect some gambling advice.
Yeah, I will tell people they're going to listen for the first time. I do the research for some of it. Most of the betting talk is just a sneaky way of doing preview. And I like to do big picture stuff, but I'll take like the line for who's going to win the MVP. And then I just turn into a bigger symposium about something else.
Okay, so it's a springboard.
Yeah.
So I thought I would throw out some games and just do, you know, I don't know anything about gambling.
That's fine.
So I'll probably say this stuff wrong, but I'm going to do my best. So since you brought up KC and Patrick Mahomes, this one I'm calling the barbecue sauce bowl because it's Houston, Texas versus Kansas City. And Texas and Kansas City are known for their barbecue. And so this is hugely consequential. It almost feels like there's a way of looking at the NFL that hangs in the balance. You've got Houston at 7-5, but KC's 6-6. If they fall under 500 at this point
they're
in
done.
The season, they're cooked.
They're over.
They're going to need that barbecue sauce.
First off, sorry to interrupt. I love that you're doing the two classic barbecue parts of the United States.
Well, it was kind of, I looked at that and I thought, what do these two places have in common? And it didn't take long to start thinking about ribs. Never does. Okay, so KC goes in at a 5.5 point. The spread is 5.5 points if you get KC. I think I'm saying that right?
You are.
Yeah, okay. And the over-under on this one is 41.5.
That's a low total.
Houston's at plus 150 and Houston's at And Casey's at minus 180. Mm-hmm. Did I say this right?
You did. You got Jimmy the Greek without the without the problematic language at the end.
Who do you like? Who you got? If you were a betting man, that's the essence of the game, to bring it back to the top.
5.5 is too much. I would take Houston to at least cover the spread and maybe win outright. The reason it's 5.5, A, Kansas City's at home and Kansas City is desperate. And as bettors, we can't quit on the Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, this goes to one of my topics. Every now and then I would look at what were the odds for Kansas City to win the Super Bowl. And before Thanksgiving, they had better odds to win the Super Bowl than at least 6-7 teams that had a better record than them. We can't quit on them. So I think I'm going to be a basic bitch. I would take Houston to cover, but I would take Kansas City to win, because I'm just one of the dum-dums that can't believe we live in a world where the Chiefs aren't in the playoffs.
Okay, well, I like that. Obviously, the betting line favors you. Mm-hmm. They are begging you to bet for KC in this case, I think.
They keep putting that number. Like, it's funny. Houston is the better record. So you go, okay.
7-5.
7-5. So then, all right, Kansas City's at home. So that gives them a couple points.
They're 5-1 at home.
Yeah. But you would think then, okay, Kansas City should be maybe by 3, 3.5 at the most. The fact that it's 5.5 means everyone is still just betting on Kansas City. They're not, they don't believe their eyes. They believe the past.
Well, the other ones that are kind of like this, and we talked about this last week, was the Ravens. And so you've got the Steelers at 6-6 against the Ravens this weekend at 6-6. And I'm calling this one the Bee Gees Bowl, because this one is all about staying alive. Whoever loses this one is cooked. And maybe cooked beyond this year, too. It feels like this isn't just a 2025 game. This is more how do we look at this organization moving forward kind of game. So the Ravens are -5.5. You get 220 if you go with the Steelers, and -270 if you go with the Ravens. How'd I do?
Yeah, pretty good, but you should have said +220 with the Steelers. You just said 220. You got to indicate plus or minus.
Oh, son of a
You were so
bitch.
Close.
You know what? It's like when you forget the decimal point in math back in the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, listen, Bob, we had you at +325 and making a mistake. So
I don't know what that means.
It doesn't matter. You don't need to.
Steelers, Ravens.
Ravens. Ravens all day. And Lamar Jackson's not having a good year, and Lamar Jackson's a little bit banged up. By the way, look into the future, man, because you get a little older, you get a little injured, your scrambling goes away, it impacts your ability to throw the ball, because defenses, they're not as scared about your scrambling. But the Steelers are a mess, and they're a mess with Aaron Rodgers. They're a mess without Aaron Rodgers. Their defense isn't very good. I think it is time for Mike Tomlin to move on. So I will take the Ravens to win and cover. I think it could be a blowout.
Okay, set the line on this one. Who is more likely to be 7-6 when they wake up on Monday? The Kansas City Chiefs, who have a tougher game, mm-hmm. but are probably the better team, or the Ravens, who have an easier game but are a shittier team? Who's more likely to be 7-6 on Monday?
More likely is the Ravens, because the Houston Texans are a very good team. They're a top three, top four defense. You know, Darryl Stingley's one of the best cornerbacks. They've got some of the best pass rushers in the NFL. So Houston is a far, far better team than the Steelers. So I'm going to say that the Baltimore Ravens have a better chance. Like, that's the logical one. All logic, all head points to Baltimore. So I'm going with that, even though I know we're all going with the Mahomes.
All right, so pretend you're Ace Rothstein from Casino here. Set the line.
Yeah.
Set the line. KC and Baltimore, who's the favorite there? You just said it was obviously
neutral
Baltimore.
Field? Where are we talking?
Neutral. Well, no, just as it lays.
Yeah.
These are the two games. If you had this, if I was going to make a bet that I believe that.
I bet the Ravens.
No, I know, but set the line. What are my odds?
Well,
am I plus something? Minus something?
The legitimate odds would be that Kansas City would be -140, 145 to have the better record than Baltimore come Monday morning. I'm telling you, take Baltimore. You're going to get it at +135. $10 wins you $13.50. I'm going to say bet Baltimore, because at some point we're going to all have to quit on Kansas City. And we should give respect to the Texans defense.
I'm assuming that's true. The logic of it made sense, but just the odds that you gave.
Well, the point is we can't quit on Mahomes and Andy Reid.
The Colts at 8-4 versus the Jags in Jacksonville at 8-4. I call this one the Fraud Bowl. because we're waiting for both of these teams to prove they're not any good.
I know.
Or not nearly as good as 8-4 would suggest. This is a pretty rare opportunity for two totally suspect teams to prove us right about not trusting them.
This is a funny game. This is a...
Oh, can I give you the numbers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jacksonville is +1.5. Mm-hmm. That's the spread. You've got the Colts at -105. And the Jags at +105.
Yeah, okay. So it's a fairly even game in terms of...
Nobody knows what to do with this because people distrust these teams equally.
Yeah, this is the... we should care about this game, but no one gives a fuck. Colts-Jags, through the history of time, no one's cared about this game ever. They haven't. Like, we cared about the Colts when they had Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning. Beyond mm-hmm. that, we've never cared about them. We've never cared about Jacksonville, ever.
We tried, too, when we were on the air. We used to do Hot Jags talk.
We were
Canada's leading source for Jacksonville Jaguars information.
We had one week where Aaron Karolnik booked us former Jags. Like,
we had Jags week.
Yeah, we didn't just do that as we weren't just fucking around. We dedicated to it.
We really did. We did, and it, actually, I believe... We came in one day and did a tailgate party, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
We dressed up in our Jags gear.
And it was all just an insult to Jacksonville. It really was.
But we would phone down there and be like, can you get us Blake Bortles?
Yeah. I remember we got some
really good old Jags.
Yeah, we did. We got some good, like the Tom Coughlin mid to late 90s Jags. Those were fun teams.
Hot Jags talk.
Oh, I know. We could do a debate about Fred Taylor.
Okay, so Colts and Jags. The Fraud Bowl.
And they're both so injured. There's so many injuries on both these teams.
Is this a stay away for gamblers? If you were a betting man, would you just not bet it?
I just bet the under.
Just bet the under. Yeah, I didn't write it down.
The total's probably 43.5. It can't be much more than that. I think I would avoid it. Sauce Gardner, you know, the big acquisition by the Colts, he's injured. I think, and we know that Daniel Jones is all hurt. I guess if I had to bet... I would take Jacksonville. I wouldn't feel good about it, but I would take the Jaguars. I feel they're a little healthier, and there just feels like the Colts are just going down.
I'm trying to think, is there a sport outside of football like an equivalent to Trevor Lawrence? Somebody who is so hyped and hasn't technically been terrible, but has never lived up to their potential billing. Okay, go for it.
This is easy.
Okay.
This is a guy that also proves that working out and getting in shape and being skinny is a fool man's game.
Mm-hmm.
Zion Williamson, very famous at college, has had some great moments. And sometimes you look at the ceiling, like, my God, the ceiling of this guy is an all-star. Just like the ceiling of...
Oh, it's all NBA.
Yeah. The ceiling of Trevor Lawrence is you can win a Super Bowl with him being the answer at quarterback because he was so good in college and it's never happened. I'm going to go Zion Williamson.
There's a weird athlete where there two things are true at once. We can't win with this guy. We can never deal him.
It's true.
You have no idea what to do. We're afraid that Austin Matthews is going to fall into that category.
Mm-hmm.
He's not quite there.
By the way.
Don't even manifest it. I took Zion Williamson in my fantasy pool this year. He was only $25. And I thought, if he plays 60 games, now he's not on pace to do that. He's quite injured. Like once every week, I just check in to see when's his expected return date.
And also, we've been going back and forth. Zion Williams. I don't know why I keep saying Williamson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know which one of us screwed up. I'll assume it was me. Is it over for him? Like he did the thing where he's like, he looks skinny. So it's like, okay, you're no longer out of shape. Is he just one of these guys... like a Joseph Wall, potentially, I'm going to turn my phone off, apologies, where the body, there's something within the body that's going to betray you. You know, like no matter what happens. And with Zion, a lot of his injuries, his fault. Lack of professionalism, lack of proper diet, and just didn't give a shit.
He's Larry Johnson in the sense that he's not huge, but he's big and he's built like a tank. And part of his game is explosiveness, which you usually don't see at that size. But it's such a rare combination of things that the body just can't handle it. Larry Johnson hurt his back when he was with the Knicks. When he was with Charlotte, he could jump out of the gym and he was a tank. He looked like Mike Tyson and he could fucking launch. And you just don't see that. And Zion came with all of these skills. But I think there's something just... We're used to this with big men because big men's bodies are just too big.
Wemby.
right? Greg Oden being the most famous, but there's any, like, there's a fucking laundry list of big men who just break down way before you think they're going to. They're just too big. Zion looks like a specimen, but he breaks like a little girl, if I can borrow a line from Bob Dylan.
Yeah, it's true. Just everything on the outside, like, you look wonderful. And then you
look so good.
And then you look under the hood and you're like, this, you know, there, this car is not going to go. By the way, sort of off topic.
Yeah.
You mentioned Larry Johnson, Grandmama. Mm-hmm. So we did on the show on Tuesday some of our favorite athlete endorsement moments of all time.
Yeah.
And
good one.
I pulled up Larry Johnson, and my producer, who loves basketball, 25 years old, wasn't even I think I heard about that, was staring at the YouTube, had no idea what any of this was. And was I angry? Did I feel so old? But had no earthly idea what he was looking at.
When I was a kid in high school, it was normal for most of us to love the music of the day, but you knew all about music from the 60s. And a lot of it was some of your favorite music. Now, part of that was because the boomers would never let us forget about it. And so it was foisted upon us. But I don't know when it happened that it became a badge of honor to know fuck all about anything that happened before you were born. It's the weirdest thing. It's not only that they don't know. They almost feel sorry for you, that you would expect that they might know. Like, something's wrong with you.
All right, let's explore this.
Okay, let's do this.
This is going to go heavy. Bye-bye, sports. I think it's a lot of things. I think the obvious one is because there's so much more entertainment options and the internet and TikTok. Just there's so many different things to keep you satiated.
So it's an entertainment flood the zone.
Exactly. I knew Casablanca because I love movies, but I love Casablanca because in 1989, there was still maybe 30 channels of TV. So you sort of got into it because that's what was out there. Agree or disagree with that one?
I totally agree. I think it's a great point. Let me throw one back to you now.
We'll just go back and forth.
Okay. I think part of it is because what happened before doesn't matter anymore. And this is actually true because we rip up stuff and start again constantly. The idea that, like, you know, we used to go to stores and it would be like, here since 1947, and you thought, oh, it's probably good. Well, now it's irrelevant. Like, how could it be good if it's been around that long? It's not new. Everything is new. You saw this with hip hop. Hip hop had this really interesting twist. And hip hop was always about what's next, what's everyone doing on the street. It was very much about capturing the essence of something and then moving, doing it and then moving past it fast. But the problem is somehow it became almost like a detriment to revisit something, because we were on to the next thing. It's the market thinking. It's corporate thinking. Everything is about what just happened doesn't matter, what's next.
The marketing one's an interesting one. When we were growing up, and this is going to go into parenting and self-esteem and all this, but there wasn't as much about, hey, to all the kids, you're the best, you're special, you're awesome. It was often adults going, huh? Be quiet. The parents are smoking, having scotch, and worried about mortgages or something. And now it's so much more. And I don't even mean any of this as a negative, just as a thing. There's a lot more glorification of youth. And it's like, what are the young people doing? Where CBS News is doing a piece on 6-7 because 9-year-olds are going nuts. So for some reason, 50-year-olds have to care about something like that. And then that sort of translates into the, I don't want to sound like an old man, or I don't want to sound like an old man yelling at the clouds. What's wrong with being older? You know, and yes, there's negatives about being older. You don't want to be too conservative and not be open to adapting to new ideas. But because there's a glorification of youth, and the other side is, okay, old man, I think that also plays a part.
Okay, so let me take that just a step further, because I think it's interesting. Ever since the turn of the Second World War, just afterwards, youth culture was synonymous with pop culture, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, whether it was rock and roll or what was happening in theaters. There's always been a fascination with who's young and what they're doing. But the problem is, and you point this out very wisely, this is no country for old men. once you get past about 35, it used to be once you hit 65, you were invisible. Now when you hit about 30, you become kind of invisible. And this is even true in the corporate world. I think about this all the time. When we were coming up in the business, people would get into their 50s and 60s, and that was kind of their glory time. Vice president of this or whatever. Like, you stayed somewhere, you got good at it, your knowledge was institutional and valuable, and therefore, you had to accumulate enough experience that you could do the important jobs. That's not true anymore. It's actually an impediment because something has already changed. You didn't grow up with it. You actually don't have good answers because you've been around for a while, because the questions are all different. It's like you studied for a test. We're not even taken anymore. So people get to 40 and 50, never mind the fact that now they're making too much money and they realize that a kid who's just coming out of university will do the same job, work twice as hard for 70% of the pay. So,
and the real estate is much more expensive.
So I guess this is all trickle down to where whatever happened before you were young just doesn't matter.
It's a very odd, like, I always find it interesting, the, I don't want to sound like an old person now. And it's like almost you're afraid to, you know, you're afraid to, I don't want to be Abe Simpson's, you know, screaming at the clouds. I think both things can be possible. I think you can embrace, this is my age, I have opinions, but still be malleable, still be open to reinvention. And there's just such this fear, and I think a lot of it is corporate and marketing and Wall Street and Bay Street or whatever street that says, no, no, young, 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 that's the only thing that matters.
We live in a world that's driven by markets and ruled by marketing. And this has eventually become just part of how we see our place in the economic food chain, in the cultural food chain. You know, we see this in Toronto. It's not like we didn't grow up with a certain essence of this. Let me put this to you. Those of us who grew up with the Maple Leafs of the 70s and 80s and 90s don't know anything that happened before 1967. You say, hey, Mihovlich, he was a great Leaf. Fred? No, that's Frank.
Yeah.
And so it's not like we don't have a sense of amnesia ourselves about the past. But this is much more widespread, to where someone says, I love basketball, and they've never heard of Larry Johnson, who's one of the 75 best players of all time.
And just was, I mean, part of the spearheaded a massive like Nike campaign. Like, it was
huge.
Or it was huge.
And they wouldn't know Penny, and they wouldn't know Karl Malone. Mm-hmm. But that's an entire era of basketball defined. Now, you're different. You personally, in the sense that you always loved the history of stuff.
Yes.
You were the only NFL fan who not only could talk comfortably about the 70s and 80s, you would talk about slinging Sammy Ball. Oh,
led the NFL in touchdowns, interceptions, and punting as well.
Part of it is also the internet, Matt. We'll get back to sports in a second, but the internet widens everything and then deepens nothing. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly spreading out your interests. So you don't like... When we were young, knowing more about something meant going deeper into it, whereas now knowing more about something is just more like, how many things does this connect to?
Yeah.
And so because of that, this guy can know a gazillion things about the Raptors, whereas we might have known 100. That's all the information we had access to. Now this guy has access to a gazillion pieces of information about the Raptors. But outside of that area, there's really no space or interest to find out more about what context they sit in.
And it needs to be said, it's not a condemnation of someone born in from 1999 to 2003. It's more market forces and technology and smartphones and just what that does. Like, I see 50-year-old men that are scrolling on TikTok all day. Imagine being 9 and having that in your life 10 years ago and what that's going to do. Like, and that's why I think there is a lot more of that of, huh, I never heard of that. Ah, moving on, I'm going down this rabbit hole.
You take on the values of your society,
yeah,
whether you want to or not. And there was a long time where there was a depth model to society. The idea was, how can you be a better citizen? How can I know more about things? Those were all virtues. Now I think there's a productivity paradigm where it's just about what can I turn into something? And this guy doesn't need to know Larry Johnson. It's irrelevant to his life, so therefore, it's just not going to happen. It's what's in front of me.
One other thing, and then we will get back to sports. I just heard, and I just saw the headline. Netflix is buying Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I saw this.
Yeah, $82 billion. Yeah.
And there was one thing about how one statement was, oh, no, we're still focusing on movies being in theaters. Mm-hmm. But then the line was, but there might be a different
distribution model,
like time range, basically saying movies will be in the theater, but we're going to get them on Netflix extra fast. And I saw that and it bummed me out, A, just because I love going to the movies, but COVID got everyone to be at home. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some advantages to that, obviously. But when you're at home all the time, you're not meeting people. You're not meeting someone who could inspire you, someone you could marry. You're not spending as much time just being around other humans. And I think that's detrimental. So when I hear this and it's like, it's just another thing pushing more people to not leave their home and Uber eat in their favorite meal. And they just never leave. And I don't think that's good to be a human being staying inside your four walls.
We're all getting crazy siloed, and the technology not only facilitates it, it loves it.
Yeah.
It thrives on it. The sad thing about the Netflix purchasing Warner Brothers for me is that HBO now falls under the mantle of Netflix. And so all those titles go over there. But HBO once upon a time was the model of quality. And it was distinct because the slogan used to be, it's not TV, it's HBO.
Yep.
The idea that this is premium, this is special. And you look at that incredible list of shows that they created, from Sopranos to The Wire to, you know, Game of Thrones. The idea was, you're going to buy this because it's excellent. Loved that so much. And, you know, some of it was a little bit challenging. And you wanted that. It was there to be challenging. It was the opposite of the mainstream. So now the most mainstream thing goes and buys this stuff, and it's going to water it all down. The Netflix model is like CBS back in the day. Water this down so the most people can watch it with the minimal effort. That's the world. Like, if we talk about like the old man get off my lawn kind of stuff, you know, this kid not knowing lots about Larry Johnson, I think that's ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure he probably knows a ton of stuff because he's not any stupider than we were.
Oh, no, no. This is not about intelligence.
Yeah, this is just his interests, mm-hmm. and they're focused in the way that they're focused, and something new will come out of it. What makes me more sad is when Netflix buys all of these titles and the purpose is not just to acquire them, but to water them down. That is part of the purpose, because their model is, you know, and they've said this, and I think we've talked about this on the pod, but they give very frequently notes to creators, which is, make sure this is simple enough so that anybody can be half watching and still follow.
Is this good enough that you'll keep your interest even when you're not watching it?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And enough shiny so that you can pick up your head after not paying attention for 4 minutes from scrolling. Mm-hmm. And still have an idea of what's going on. A bit like Young and the Restless back in the day, where you could not watch for 6 months on a soap opera in the middle of the day, and the same couple is having the same argument six months later.
And we don't consume movies the same way when we're at home. Like, I don't. Like, I can virtue signal about how, you know, I'm going to still just be completely unplugged and not tethered to technology. But I remember like seeing this movie called Blue Ruin.
Yeah, you loved that movie.
So good. And I remember at one point, 45 minutes in, and I realized I haven't moved. I haven't looked at anything. I haven't looked at my phone, but I haven't even gotten up to, you know, clean a counter, because I'm a clean freak. Nothing. I was just sitting there watching it. With all this watering down, it's just going to make it more and more that the great art means you can do three things at once.
Well, maybe the model moving forward will be movies and entertainment, like visual storytelling, will be more like music, in the sense that it's mostly wallpaper. You still enjoy it. You still have it on all the time, but you're not really engaged with it in the same way. But then there's this other live version of it, and the movie theater would be kind of like a live concert, but increasingly that becomes a premium event. Mm-hmm. And what dies in the middle are the clubs and the places where bands go and play, and you drop $15 and grab a beer and watch a set. Like, that's going to be like going to the movies just to watch some random movie. Like, people just aren't going to do it. My daughter is so excited to go to the cinema on, I can't remember, I think it's the 31st of December or whatever, because they're putting the Stranger Things finale in. And that's an event. And
that's
these kids
event.
And these kids are going to love that. And I think we're going to see more of that kind of thing.
I hope so.
You know, where the live movie experience is an outing.
In summation, I will never do, our day was always better than today.
Our day was better than today.
I understand that, but I'm trying to.
It's not even close, Matt.
I know.
You may never do it, but nobody thinks you don't think that.
It's true. I think that I'll just say this. I don't like living in a world where we're being pushed more and more to be in silos. I don't think that is healthy for human beings. We're meant to be around each other, and it got accelerated by COVID, and it's going to get accelerated by this Warner Brothers Netflix
thing. Well, I have this debate on text thread with Jonas, and we were talking about the Jays, and this was just after Dylan Cease was signed. I was excited, and I said, I'm happy it's a bit of an overpay, but they're in the game. It shows other free agents that they're trying to be a powerhouse. He said, I would have rather had Framber Valdez, right? I thought, yeah, okay. But if you remember, Framber threw a ball at his catcher when he was with the Texas Rangers. There was some kind of cross-up with signals, and he got really irritated, Framber did. So he threw the ball, but he crossed up the catcher on purpose, so the ball bounced off his chest, and then he walked away. Now, he eventually apologized for it. How sincere that apology was, I don't know. But that's a pretty cruddy, shitty thing to do. And so I said, I don't want that guy. He's an asshole. And Jonas kind of picked up the, well, what does it matter, right? They had an argument. Guys have arguments behind the scenes all the time. Like, you know, who's to say what's good and what's bad? We got into that classic argument. Mm-hmm. Because the answer is, maybe Jonas's pick would have been the better signing. If the goal was to win. And this is what was at the heart of the thing here. When you talk about we don't want to be siloed and stuff, I came to realize that I didn't want Framber because I want my team to represent my community. I don't want it to be there to win necessarily as the number one goal. And that really messed me up because we live in a time now where everything has been so atomized, you know, whether it's fantasy or gambling, where really it is just about points and winning. It doesn't even matter who they are, really. And how many times with analytics has it been said, you don't even need to watch the game. You kind of can just look at the box score and assume you know what happened. And a lot of people are comfortable with that. But you lose that emotional connection to sport. And one of the essences of that emotional connection is personal, you know, aspirational, all those things. But then there's another part of it that's community. You hear me rail all the time against the price of the Leafs. And I think what it really comes down to is that rich and poor people can't go to the same place and hang out and cheer for the same thing anymore. Well, no wonder they don't have anything in fucking common because everybody has been told you're totally different from this group and everything in the world proves that that's right.
Agreed. In a perfect world, the Scotiabank Arena, Skydome, whatever, there is a mix of incomes, but there's less and less of it. And the people that don't make as much money, you are higher up in the top. And yeah, I mean, you see it more and more, the platinumization of it all.
The skyboxification of the sports world. Let's do a couple more NFL games.
Sports.
Here. Yeah, we'll get back to sports. That was quite a tangerine there.
By the way, I knew 10 seconds in. That's why I put the warning. We're going to be here for a little while.
It's funny. You got comfy.
Yeah.
You did. You grabbed the coffee. You took a long sip. Yep. You're like, okay.
All right.
The Ice Bowl, Chicago versus Green Bay. Chicago at 9-3, Green Bay at 8-3. Green Bay is -6.5. Chicago is +270. Green Bay is -340. What that tells me is people do not believe in Chicago. People believe Green Bay is pretty good. I'm calling it the Ice Bowl because these are two teams that are used to playing in snow. And it'll be fucking cold because it's Green Bay in December. But both teams will be okay with that.
Do not bet on Green Bay. There is zero value on that money line.
Really?
Because minus, when you get up to -300, especially for an interdivisional game, now you can't do that. You cannot do that. Now, what was the spread? What was
6.5.
6.5 in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I feel so unfair for the Bears. I still lean on Green Bay to win and cover. Green Bay's been such this underwhelming team this year. They've had some dumb losses, losing to some bad teams, but I trust Jordan Love a lot more than I trust Caleb Williams. So I hate to say it, I will take Green Bay, and I feel bad because the Bears just had their most impressive win. They ran for over 250 yards against a good Eagles team that had Jordan Davis in the lineup. He won't be there on Monday night against the Chargers. By the way, this got real sporty. We went from like philosophical to hardcore sports.
That's us, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's us in a nutshell. 2.0. Anybody who's still listening knows this is who we are.
Yeah. I'll take Green Bay, and I kind of hate doing it, but I'm going to take Green Bay.
It's amazing to me that about 5-6 weeks ago, we were having a discussion, a real one. Will Caleb Williams even be a starter in a year or two?
I'm not done with that
discussion. And I picked up my head, and I was like, they're 9-3, but to your point, I still wonder if he's going to be a starter in 2 years.
He makes so many bad throws. Now, listen, he's done enough right and good for the team. They're buying into Ben Johnson. They are winning. That's huge for a team that hasn't won in years. Like they get full credit. Caleb Williams gets credit as well. He's gotten better from year one to year two. But considering he's drafted number one overall, Ben Johnson is there. They have all these weapons. And there's eight or nine throws. You're like, what the fuck are you doing?
Do you remember Joe Jackson and it was Shoeless Joe Jackson?
Do I remember?
Yeah, like the player?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's now shirtless Ben Johnson. Shirtless Ben.
Yes, hey, listen,
he looked good, though.
He did.
He looked really good.
Good for him.
They had a big win. He took off his shirt. Kind of a George Springer's going to ride through the town on a horse with no tarp on.
Yeah, there's William Nylander right there next to him as well.
Mm-hmm. As Lady Godiva.
I'm just going with famous athletes who are topless all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, he looked really good. Okay, one more, and then I want to make sure we get some into some basketball because there's a lot of big stuff happening. I'm going to call this the Tush Bowl, and it's the Eagles against the LA Chargers. It's in LA, Philly at 8-4, Chargers at 8-4. Chargers are +2.5. Now, the spread is +2.5. The Philly is -148. Chargers are +124, and I'm calling this the Tush Bowl because I feel like the bloom is off that rose a little bit of the Tush Push. People are figuring out a little bit how to stop it, and if the Chargers beat them, I think the dialogue is going to be, is the Tush Push over?
The Eagles are going to be without their best defensive lineman. That's big.
Is he having surgery?
Yes, shoulder stuff. But on the other side, the Chargers don't have their starting tackles, but they haven't for most of the year. But I believe Justin Herbert had some sort of surgery on his hand this week.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's playing on Monday. This one is so hard. You know what? I'm going to go with the Eagles. I'm going to go with the Eagles. A, they're not in Philadelphia. And I think that actually helps them. You know, because we saw them getting booed mercilessly on the Thanksgiving game. I'm going to go with the Eagles. And I will take the points.
How long do we have?
We have 14 minutes.
Okay, let's make sure that we get this wine thing in because you're doing top fives around wine and gifts for Christmas this year. You've done top five wines between $30 and $50.
This one that I'm doing, again, is Canadian.
Yeah, so this one's going to be top five Canadian wines that people can buy as gifts.
Yeah, and what I've done to make it simpler is I've just done a grape, the winery that I think best makes that grape. The best makes that wine.
And can you give the price too, or the price range?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
All right. And are you going to do ascending order? Because you always do descending order, and it pisses me off.
I always go from 5 to 1, don't I?
No.
Did I get one from 1 to 5?
You go from 1 to 5.
Oh, that is annoying. I'm pissed off at me now. I can't believe I did that.
Letterman taught us the way.
Yeah.
The top 10 list thoughts.
I'm going to be even more annoying. I'm just going to tell you these 5 grapes. It's whatever you like the most. I'm trying to make it easier. Like if
you know what? You're such a wine guy.
I know.
Like, you know, who am I to tell you what to drink? Matt, as an idiot, that's exactly what I want, is for you to tell me what to drink.
But if you're a Cabernet fan, Merlot fan, Pinot fan, Chardonnay fan, or sparkling fan, I have the winery for you.
Okay. Well, you know, you let her rip, Matt, and then I'll look at you afterwards and not know,
you know
what you're talking
about. Let's just do it now. We'll do it right now real quick. I can do this in a minute.
Okay.
So if you love sparkling, this is the only one I'm really waffling. 13th Street or Henry of Pelham. Both of them have excellent sparkling programs. You can get their top-end stuff is under $50, and they still make it the same way they make champagne. So I would say if you want sparkling. If you want Chardonnay, Leaning Post. I haven't mentioned them before. They're Hamilton's winery. This is the winery that's closest to Hamilton. And these are incredible wines. Also, they do a lot of charity work for the Ukraine. So consider Leaning Post. Great Chardonnay. If you want Pinot Noir, I mentioned it before. I'm a broken record. I don't care. It's Thomas Batchelder. Now, these ones, the Village level, mid-30s. The most expensive will be $75. That's a lot of money. But just know, he's not making much of a profit. That money is going into just the style, the quality of the wines, and they pay their employees a fair wage. If you want Merlot, Kirby Estate, Niagara on the Lake, incredible Merlot, and then Cabernet Sauvignon, I went with one called Ice Cellars. They have in near Niagara on the Lake, the area is called St. David's Appellation. It's the warmest sub-appellation in all of Southern Ontario, which is why in certain years you can get Cabernet. Look at 2020. It was a hot enough year. So there's 5 grapes and 6 wineries, all local.
Is it possible that the Thomas Batchelder reference is replacing the Jaws reference as the thing that we'll always get to in every episode?
No, because the Batchelder will very soon go away. By the way, the best, one of the great moments in Jaws, when Roy Scheider is drinking and having dinner and disappointed, and Richard Dreyfuss comes in and he brings a bottle of white and red, mm-hmm. and Roy Scheider opens the bottle and just starts filling the glass. And Richard Dreyfuss puts his hand out to say, no, 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 that's enough for my glass. Mm-hmm. And Roy Scheider pours it right to the top like a little kid getting a glass of milk.
Do you remember what Dreyfuss says to him? You might want to let that breathe.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great moment.
Anyway, so they actually did a callback to that in Stranger Things, where the chief is drunk. The chief of police is drunk. And he says, I'm going to go do something. And someone says, can you do that? And he's got the drink in his hand. He goes, I can do anything. I'm chief of police. That's which is right. A direct reference to Jaws.
Yeah, that was like in season one.
Right, when they're going to cut the shark open.
Yeah. All right, let's do NBA.
Okay, so let's do some wraps because there was a tough loss last night, 123-120, losing to the Lakers at home. Back and forth. You know, like the Lakers would pull ahead, the Raptors would catch up. It came down to two key events. One was a non-call on Brandon Ingram with about 20 seconds left. It really should have been a foul, but they didn't call anything. Play continued. And then LeBron, as he always does, with the dagger, not a shot this time, at a pass in the corner to Rui Hachimura. Three goes down right at the buzzer. The crowd, the air lets out. So sad. Thoughts?
Thoughts is that LeBron is the most influential basketball player in the history of the Raptors. He's more influential. I believe this. He's more influential than Kyle Lowry, Vince Carter, whoever you
this
want.
This is a great take. Go for it. I think I know where you're going with this, but I want to hear you say it.
It's a very easy one. One, he's been in our lives since 2004. The first time he played here, Toronto beat Cleveland. It was like 75-69. That was the final score, not the score at the half. But LeBron James's dominance, the 3 years in the playoffs with Dwayne Casey and DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, that forced Masai Ujiri to say, okay, I've got to do something really drastic. Dwayne Casey, you're fired. Kawhi Leonard, we're going to go bring you in. And DeRozan, you are out. And LeBron James's excellence led to the team being that aggressive. LeBron James is the most influential. Not the best, but he's had more influence on the Raptors than any member of the Raptors.
I really like that take. So last night was the first time in 16 years that he didn't put up at least 10 points on the stat sheet in a regular season game. Goes back to 2007. He had 8 points last night. LeBron said he's actually going to get this box score framed, show it to his grandkids one day. In a weird way, it feels like this is the beginning of the end for real.
Yes.
And yet, a friend of mine was texting Ihor, and he was saying, oh, he looks really worn out. And he does, but you can see how smart he is in everything that he does on the court. I watched in those last 6 minutes, and he's setting screens and picks, and Austin Reeves, with about a minute left, gives the ball to LeBron close to the top of the key, and LeBron gives it right back to him. And I remembered thinking, that's him saying, you've got 44 points. You're the hot hand. You go do this. Would Russell Westbrook do that?
No.
Right? He'd be calling for the ball from the bench, Russell Westbrook. You know, like there's a certain thing when you've been a great scorer, it's hard to say, I'm going to pass this up. But even though he had 8 points, he had 11 assists. He's still that guy. And he found Hachimura in the corner. He still knows how to play basketball so well. I think he can still function at a high level for another 4 or 5 years.
Certainly much more than Vince Carter at the end. Vince Carter was like 11 minutes on Atlanta. It's funny. I was joking that what a selfish move by LeBron by being unselfish, because then he became the story, not Austin Reeves. And that was in jest. It was in total jest.
He can't help but make it about him.
LeBron James knew he had 8 points. And he could have taken the shot. The game was tied. If he had missed it, it's like, okay, we go into overtime. We win in overtime. I get to keep my record and we win the game. And he passed it. The moment he passed it, he's like, I want to win a early December regular season game more than I want to keep this odd streak alive.
They're 16-5. They're the number one team in the Pacific. They're second in the conference. Third in the conference. The idea that they're this good, and Doncic wasn't even playing last night. I love the way LeBron is landing the plane. I really do. I usually have schadenfreude about old athletes who have tortured my city's team as they decline. But in this case, I want him to go out with a bang because he really deserves it.
Well, currently his play screams, because we were wondering, how would he ingratiate himself? How would he be with the organization? And I think there
with
might
the, with the Lakers.
With the Lakers, yeah. Because he's no longer the most important player. And we wondered.
He might not even be the second most important player. Austin Reeves is awfully good.
Yeah. I think with LeBron, his ego might still get in the way when it comes to transactions and what the front office is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But LeBron James on the court is not going to be ego monster. I'm still the guy. As you pointed out, Austin Reeves gave him the ball. He said, no. That ball's yours now. And LeBron, he showed you. He showed you that night that it's still about basketball and winning. What his ego is with dealing with the front office might still creep up, but on the court, I don't think it will.
1,125 regular season games since he scored under 10 points. You know who was on the Cleveland Cavaliers that night, the last time he had 8 points? The starting lineup was LeBron.
Yeah.
Can you guess the other four?
Let's see. Was Ben Wallace on that team?
Nope.
Ilgauskas. Daniel Gibson? Booby?
No. He might have been, but he wasn't one of the starting
he
five.
He wasn't one of the... Okay, just tell me who it was before we just keep...
Drew Gooden, yep. Eric Snow, and Larry Hughes.
Oh my God, Larry Hughes! What is it about just when you hear random players from 25 years ago that make you smile?
Well, especially those guys, because it was the ultimate example of one player and his little friends make it to the final. Ilgauskas was a good player.
He was. But go and look, everyone out there, go look at the box score of game one of the first time Cleveland went to the finals. I think it was like around 07 against San Antonio. The Spurs swept him. Go look at the box score and who was starting with LeBron.
You know, Mamu played pretty well last night. But even though he only had 17 points, 8 boards, I felt like DeAndre Ayton really made life hard for them out there. They just, without Poeltl in the lineup, they're just undersized. They don't, you know, that was an issue. And then RJ, you know, I've been saying forever that they need to trade the guy, but...
They need RJ Barrett back because Brandon Ingram's been fantastic. But I think it's going to wear on him a little bit if he's got to take all these shots.
He looked tired to me.
He did, and he shouldn't look tired. He's not old enough for that. But I think it's the burden. You know,
I think it's the usage.
Yeah. We saw it on Saturday when against Charlotte, who I think the Raptors played 17 times in a row. He didn't make a shot in the fourth quarter in an overtime. And then last night, he was like 1 for 5 in the fourth quarter and had a turnover. You know, and I think it's catching up with Brandon Ingram.
Scotty, 23, 11, and 9 last night, a total joy to watch. And this is now relevant and kind of weird almost because there are Giannis Antetokounmpo trade rumors. Danny Green went on Overdrive yesterday and said actually Toronto would be a great spot for him. And it would probably require giving up on Scotty Barnes. That seems so crazy to me that we would suggest you don't go get Giannis to hang on to Scotty. However, don't we all feel in our gut weirdly like a deal for Giannis that would require giving up Scotty doesn't feel worth it?
I wouldn't do it.
It seems crazy though, right?
I know,
because like
I know.
Giannis is still amazing.
I know.
He's still amazing. Like, he's a 40-20 guy, Matt.
I wouldn't do it. Because you'd have to throw in other draft picks. The Scotty Barnes development, you know, like, he's taken a jump. And Scotty Barnes is never going to be Giannis. Okay, front end, back end. He's not going to be Giannis. But you're getting 30-year-old Giannis who's now getting some injuries. I wouldn't do it. I would not do the deal. I'm a little risk-averse. That's who I am. I would not do this deal.
The age is the real issue and the injuries. He went down yesterday, Giannis did, with a calf injury. He's out 2 to 4 weeks, probably. If we're serious about it, Scotty's ceiling is probably a top 20 to 25 player.
I'll go
maybe
a little higher.
Maybe 50.
15.
Maybe 15.
Yeah, 15 to 20. I think he can be that.
Whereas Giannis, top five when healthy, right?
And the gap between 5 and 15 is massive.
They have young players, the Raptors do. They're not like San Antonio where they have tons of really good young players, but they've got some. Colin Murray-Boyles, we don't know him well enough to know what he's going to be. It's promising. He had 12 points last night. And you feel like, you know, he's one worth watching.
He's a top 10 pick. Grady Dick, top 15 pick. Like, you know,
I don't love Grady Dick. I know there are people out there who feel really good about his game. I kind of think he's always going to be just a guy. You know, I think his ceiling belongs in the NBA. you know, you fall in love with these guys because you see them all the time. You watch them progress. You get invested in their development. But if we're honest, the league is looking at Grady Dick and going, oh, okay, well, he's, you know, it's all right.
The Raptors, if they...
Jacoby Walter, same thing.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. I'm still holding out hope for Grady Dick because I think I'm trying to wish it into existence that he'll become a consistent
shooter. I'm listening to Grange talk about him on The Fan the other day, and Grange is right. He's like, you know, I see the hard work. They're getting him really drilling down on defense. He's practicing his slides in practice, which is something you do in grade eight. Like, they're trying to rebuild him defensively. And we look at that and we go, we love that. We love this guy. The rest of the league looks at that and goes, yeah, he's not very good, is he?
It's true.
Right? You become emotionally involved. In
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if you can throw him in. It's funny because the CMB piece to me, though, there's something about his game. He looks really good for a rook. He can score. He can defend. He's smart. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes, even for a kid.
Bob, this is where we got to end it.
Oh, fuck. Okay, well, can I give you quickly my Leafs in six words?
Okay, give it.
Real quick, because last night, great win against Carolina, 5-1. They're 4-2 on the road. This has been a nice turnabout here for the boys. But then Joseph Woll goes out. So here's my thing. You ready? Lower body injury. What the fuck? Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.